This is News Tech, Episode 12, recorded January 15th, 2012. Interview with Director Alan Wolf. This episode of News Tech is sponsored by the Zio Sleep Manager. Track and improve the quality of your sleep on your smartphone. Zio Sleep Manager. It's episode 12 of News Tech. I'm Rich Lawrence. We are back once again, coming to you from the new digs here in Albany, New York. Took a little bit of move there and took a little while to get back up and going again. Also with me is compadre Bill P. How's it going, Bill?
Hello, hello. Back again. I just got back from the road to Xanadu, so I'm doing good.
Well, was Olivia Newton-John with you?
Was, I think I saw Orson Welles on it.
Orson Welles. Okay, I was going to ask if Jeff Lynne was singing the soundtrack as well. So, all right, let's not go in there. That was bad teenage hormone movie things going on there for me. But we've got we're kind of straying away from the video hardware end of things and getting more into the digital kind of lifestyle and movies and that kind of stuff. This episode, right, Bill? So.
That's right. Yeah, I do want to briefly mention a couple things New Tech's working on and released. But other than that, yeah, let's focus completely on the interview.
Okay. Yeah, because we got a interview with a gentleman, and we're gonna we'll introduce him in just a bit. But Bill, why don't you go ahead and lay on us the other stuff real quick?
Yeah, since the last episode of News Tech, New Tech's released TriCaster Extreme 850, TriCaster Extreme 450, and Lightwave 3D 11 is in beta. And these are great new TriCasters, great new version of Lightwave, and we'll discuss it more in depth next episode.
All right, awesome. All right, yeah, we'll get to that in episode 13. But right now, with us, we have a gentleman who is the writer, director, and producer of a movie called In My Sleep. It's available on Blu-ray and DVD right now. And New York Magazine says it's genuinely suspenseful. And joining us right now is Mr. Alan Wolf. Hey, Alan, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's great for you being on the show. We appreciate you coming on, and thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Bill, Bill pretty much got a hold of you on this one, so I'm going to let Bill pretty much run the show on everything here. I'll, of course, jump in on some stuff because, you know, I'm in radio. I can't shut up. So, So we'll just get things rolling. Bill, go ahead, and I mean. You are the master of ceremonies. Ceremony
right.
Away.
Thanks, Rich. Alan, please tell us about yourself. You grew up in Dayton, Ohio, right?
I did. I grew up in Dayton, Ohio, specifically Kettering, which is a suburb of Dayton. Charles Kettering was an inventor. He actually invented the self-starter for the automobile.
Wow.
Otherwise, we'd still be hand cranking them today.
Oh, yeah.
That's no fun. Yeah.
We'd all look like Popeye with big forearms.
That's right. Yes, Dayton, Ohio.
How'd you get into filmmaking, and what were the first movies that you created?
Well, I became very interested in films as a kid. I think seeing Star Wars really inspired me,
and yeah.
I think when I was 9 years old, I actually started writing screenplays. I worked on my first screenplay then, and then my uncle gave me my first movie camera, and so it was a Super 8 camera, and I created scripts, and I cast people from the neighborhood and around the city and started making films. About every other year, I would create something, and then I would have a big premiere at my school of the films that I created.
So nice. I got a quick question for you, because you mentioned Star Wars. I'm a Star Wars geek. Big one.
Yeah.
Are you going to see it in 3D?
Well, you know, I'm not as much of a fan of the newer ones that they came out with, but I saw the trailer for it, I thought,
you got to go.
I see it. I know. It just looks so cool in 3D.
Have you met George Lucas in person? You ever bumped elbows with him or anything?
I have not, no.
Oh, okay. I was going to
ask. A friend of mine worked on the visual effects for several of the movies, so it was interesting to hear those stories.
Oh, that's cool. That's I'm sure they're probably really good. So,
yeah.
So now getting back to you though, where'd you go to school? I mean, obviously you went to, you know, school in Dayton, Ohio. But what about like film school and that?
After Ohio, I moved to New York City to go to film school at New York University.
How was that? What was the experience like that?
It was outstanding. I loved it. I mean, it's a wild experience just moving from Dayton, Ohio to New York. I was in culture shock for the first like maybe 6 months I was there until I could figure out the subway system. Once I figured out the subway system, I think it felt more like home. But no, we had really terrific professors, you know, who were also working professionals. So they were able to just really give us a great perspective on what it means to just to the craft of filmmaking. And they're able to also look at different areas, writing, directing, producing. Those are all areas that I was interested in, and I was able to take really specific classes to learn each part of the craft.
Which part of those three jobs did you like the best? Which one was your favorite?
You know, I think writing and directing to me go hand in hand, because one is kind of creating it in your imagination, and then the directing part is making it come, you know, into reality. And of course the producing part is very much needed to just figure out the nuts and bolts as far as what it's going to take for the film to come into fruition. So they all kind of work together really well. I like working with, you know, teams of people, but I think they all have different kind of lead ups. Like writing, you're mostly alone in a room or some secluded place, or, you know, you're not having a lot of interaction with people. Whereas, you know, when you get into the directing phase, you know, obviously it's, you are talking and working with a lot of people. And so that's, they're very different.
Yeah. So going into the one, just one part of it though, the producing, what kind of nuts and bolts do you actually have to deal with in producing a movie? Coming from, you know, the audio end of things, I have zero clue about, you know, television and video.
Right. Well, it's producing really has to do with hiring everyone who works on the film and being in charge of how all the money is spent. In the particular case of In My Sleep, I also raised the financing for the movie. So sometimes that's included as well. The producer will put together the financing or, you know, whatever is needed to make the project possible. But the producer works very closely with the director in terms of hiring the best people for each of the roles. So that's usually why when you watch the Academy Awards, it's the producers who win the Oscar for Best Picture, because they're the ones who ultimately are, at the end of the day, in charge of the project and in charge of really hiring everyone who works on the project.
All right, cool. What was it that gave you, you know, the idea to write and direct your movie In My Sleep? What was it that kind of sparked it?
I had read different stories about people doing all kinds of things while they were sleepwalking. There was a man in Canada who drove to his in-law's home. He killed his in-law, punched out his father-in-law, and then drove home and was declared innocent in court because he was sleepwalking. Is that wild?
They actually
did an Unsolved Mysteries episode on this, starring Hilary Swank.
Wow.
But then, you know, there's another story in Arizona of something similar happening, of a man killing his wife while he was sleepwalking. He was declared guilty because he also hid the evidence while he was sleepwalking, and the jury didn't quite believe that someone would also hide evidence. But there are actually cases going back as far as the 1800s of this happening, and I was just really fascinated by the idea of someone having another life after they go to sleep at night.
That's pretty cool. I know Bill's got a question for you, but I just want to do one quick follow-up on that. The whole basically your main character, Marcus, it's struggling with what you call parasomnia. Is that it?
Right.
Is that an actual medical term, or is that just something, you know, kind of like a MacGuffin that you came up with for the story?
No, it's an actual medical term. I I spoke with several doctors in my research to make sure that the movie was authentic in the way that it portrayed that. And after our screening in New York, there were several people that came up to me who were in that field of medicine, and they told me that it was very accurate how it was portrayed. So I wanted it to be very accurate. And so I did put a lot of research into that part of it.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm going to make sure my fiance doesn't suffer from that. Otherwise I'm going to wake up with a smiley face on my forehead or something. Yeah. So Bill, go ahead.
Yeah, Alan, who are your favorite classic filmmakers? You're a Hitchcock fan, right?
I am a big Hitchcock fan. I think I first really discovered him in college. I'd seen some of his films before, but in terms of really deeply analyzing his films, I really appreciated his use of colors and shapes and story, the way he takes his characters on this journey of usually first realizing that they're guilty of something and then ultimately trying to be free, you know, of that. But yeah, really love Hitchcock. I mean, as far as the older filmmakers, Orson Welles, I really appreciate as well. Like Preston Sturges, and, you know, I think going through an education as a filmmaker, that's, I think, where I first really discovered some of these classic filmmakers and just really appreciated what they were doing.
They covered that in school?
Oh, yeah. Oh, very nice. Much so. Yeah. There were, you know, you would do history of cinema, and then usually you study specific filmmakers. And one of the courses that I took, we studied Hitchcock specifically.
Nice. What were some of the biggest challenges to make in My Sleep?
Well, most films, the biggest challenge is the actual first part, which is raising the financing. It's especially as a first-time filmmaker, most people just, I mean, you know, there are actually a lot of films that don't get made even after raising financing. So that was a big challenge, is just convincing people that, yes, this film will happen, and explaining what it was going to be about and that there was a business plan behind it. So that's, I mean, it's kind of though, you know, I talk to other filmmakers and we all collectively say, you know, it's a miracle for any movie to get made. There are so many obstacles in the way of a movie getting to completion. It's really a marathon. It's not a sprint. It's something that you just have to say, you know what, I'm going to do everything I can to bring this to completion. And because there are so many people involved and so many different elements out of your control involved, it really is something that it just takes a lot of perseverance.
I wanted to buy or rent this movie for over 2 years, but I couldn't find it. Were there some challenges getting it released into the market?
Well, it was a challenge. We, in terms of when we were completing the film, we ran into some technological challenges that took some time to resolve. And they were just laborious. I mean, literally at one point, someone was sitting in front of a monitor and looking at the film frame by frame to remove dirt artifacts because we had an issue with our post-production. I mean, silly things like that kind of delayed it being completed. But then after that, we first showed at the market at the Cannes Film Festival, and we came out pretty strong out of the gate. We ended up selling to over 70 countries around the world. And then within the year after we debuted at Cannes, we opened theatrically in the U.S. And it just takes time to build up to a theatrical campaign. It just takes months of planning and just there's so many pieces that have to come into place, because you're working with multiple theaters and people around the United States to make it happen. So that takes a long time. And then after it, it was in theaters. It went around the country for about just under a year. And then after its last theatrical screening, it came out on Blu-ray, DVD, about 3 or 4 months after that last screening, as I recall.
Was it in Chicago at all?
It was, yeah.
What
I didn't know about that.
What about Albany?
It never did come to Albany. I'm sorry.
Curses foiled again.
You got to move to Chicago, Rich, or L.A. or New York.
I can't.
You're in New York, kind of.
Yeah. I can't handle the big city like that. I don't go to New York City. That place is crazy. I'll stay upstate where it's safe.
That's right.
How'd you secure the great cast for In My Sleep?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
We had a really terrific casting director. Her name is Alyssa Weisberg. She just cast the new Mission Impossible movie, Ghost Protocol. She cast a lot of J.J. Abrams movies, Super 8, Cloverfield. She cast the Mission Impossible 2. Anyway, so I met her. We really connected well. And her role is to really bring the best possible choices to me to really consider and look over. So we would actually sit in a room where people came in and auditioned and read for parts together. And then once I cast Philip Winchester in the lead role first, and then I formed the cast around him. So I had different actors come in and read with him so I could see what their chemistry was like, how they interacted, and really formed the cast that way.
Nice.
Yeah, you got.
When's your next film coming out? Oh, sorry, Rich.
No, it's all right. No, I was just gonna mention. Yeah, you got Abigail Spencer in there, and Kelly Overton, and you know some really good actors in there. That's. Did you have to like bribe them or anything a lot, or was it like, hey, you know, I know that. Okay, that probably sounded really bad when I said, did you have to bribe them? Wow.
Well, you know, it's a challenge. I mean, it's. It's a risk for most actors to be in a film that is a first-time filmmaker because you don't know what the film is going to turn out to be like. I mean, you know, they're really putting themselves, they're putting a lot of trust in my hands. And so I think a lot of it is them, you know, meeting with me. And they told me that what really drew them is the story. They really love the story. And then after that, it's just a matter of them coming in and us being able to spend time together to see if we, you know, work well together. And, you know, it really was like a small family. We all still keep in touch with each other. But it was, yeah, a really great experience. We did a lot of work behind the scenes to prepare. I had them do a lot of improvisational exercises to build the emotional memories of the characters, because a lot of them in the movie have all kinds of histories with each other and things that happened in the past. And so I had them do these exercises where they would act out scenes that were not actually in the movie, but were scenes that took place in the characters' past. And I think that helped them to just kind of knit together, you know, an emotional history for each of their characters.
Is any of that in the extended scenes?
Yeah, you can see on the Blu-ray, has a lot of extended and deleted scenes on it. And I talk about that in the director's commentary.
Okay. Yeah, I don't have a Blu-ray player, and Bill said he's going to get me one for my wedding present, so.
Yeah.
Nice.
Everybody should get the Blu-ray, version of the movie. It's got so much more goodies on it.
Yeah, I'm looking at the back of the jewel case right now, and yeah, there's so much stuff. There's the gag reel. I always like gag reels and outtakes. Those are always fun to watch. You know, you get those ones where like people are shooting milk out of their nose because they're laughing so hard at the craft table or something. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, I love those too. I was definitely looking forward to the gag reel.
Was anybody on the cast or crew, were they really big practical jokers? Did they play a lot of jokes or anything on anybody? Or,
you know, we were laughing a lot on the set. I mean, you can see that when you see the gag reel. I mean, I'd like to have a good time, and you know, and so we would. It helps kind of break in the tension too, because obviously it's a very intense, you know, storyline that we're putting together. So we definitely had a lot of laughs, but there was no one who was really a prankster on the set. It was more something that we just, I mean, I don't know. You could see on the gag reel that there are just a lot.
It was just kind of fun ribbing and that kind of stuff.
And I would do things like, as the camera is rolling with the extras, I would have them do different responses to what's happening. And I would usually say something really absurd, as part of that, but say it very seriously, and then they would think I was being serious, and then everyone would burst out laughing. So you can see that on the gag reel.
So it's
that happens several times.
Kind of like Dr. Evil on the moon, telling all the extras, okay, now you move over there, you walk that way, back and forth a few times. And something. Okay, yeah.
The first time I've been, associated with Dr. Evil. But yeah.
So. Okay. Well, now that you mention it, the picture here on Skype. Come on, do it, Alan. Do it. $1 billion. No.
I think it's $1 million.
$1 million. Yes.
$1 million.
$1 million. How long did it take you to write In My Sleep? What the screenplay for it? How long did it take?
Well, the first draft I did pretty quickly, and that's part of my philosophy of screenplay writing, is just to get the first draft out as quickly as possible, because mm-hmm. I think that all the magic happens in the rewriting.
Yeah.
So the first draft was a matter of weeks. It was, working almost every day, about 3 weeks, first draft. But that draft is never a good draft. I mean, it's never about the very first draft. So then there, after that was, after I created that draft, as I was raising the financing, I would continue to refine and craft it. And then I would have people read the script and just hear how it sounded. And even on the set, you're working with the actors, and maybe there's some moments that you're improvising. It's just a continual process. Even through the editing, there were times where I thought, you know what, I think I want to change that line. And so you would just have the actor come in and just record a new version of the line, and as long as you're not on that actor, the audience doesn't realize
right.
that you've changed the line.
That's called looping, isn't it?
That's right. Yes.
Yeah. I did learn something in school. So you hear these stereotypes about writers and directors not getting along and all that. Since you were both the writer and the director, did you have arguments with yourself?
Constantly. I had a lot of people sort of mediate between us. We'd sit down in a room, and I'd try to explain each side of my brain what they was thinking, and there are still issues. But we have separate agents now, the writer and the director part, so that helps a lot.
Oh, okay, that's good. That's as long as you guys can still get along when you go to an award show, and
exactly. Yes.
Yeah. So another question that we wanted to know was how long does it take to make a movie like In My Sleep? How long did it take you to do production on that?
It took 5 years to raise the financing for the film, which is a long schlep. But that's kind of typical in Hollywood. And then once it was filmed, it took about 2 years from start to finish to complete the film. After a year, it was ready to go. But I talked earlier about the technical issues that we had. The film was all ready to go, and then we noticed, it's gonna sound so weird, but there was a lot of dirt on the film. Mm-hmm. We shot on film, and then it was transferred digitally, and we just noticed all these dirt artifacts. So it took months for someone digitally in a room, they had to look at the film frame by frame, find the dirt, circle it with the mouse, and then the computer would magically make the dirt disappear. And I sat in the room for several of the sessions because they weren't even doing, it was a very laborious task. So that kind of put us behind. And then when that put us behind, we decided we had recorded the orchestral score in Bulgaria, but there were some parts of it that originally we weren't going to record with the orchestra. Mm-hmm. But then we decided when we hit this delay that we were going to record the rest of the music in Los Angeles. So we went to the Clint Eastwood scoring stage at the Warner Brothers studio, and we recorded the rest of the score in Los Angeles, because oftentimes movies will have what are called just synth scores, mm-hmm. or sampled scores, which is not, someone's like playing the score on, basically a keyboard, but imitating each of the sounds of the right. instrument. So I just felt like it would be much more powerful and beautiful to have just a real full orchestra, playing the music. So we ended up doing that.
Works for John Williams, so why not you?
Exactly. And our composer, he works a lot with John Williams as his orchestrator. Conrad Pope was our composer. And so he has a lot of people really respect him. He just did the soundtrack to My Weekend with Maryland, which is in theaters now, and so we got some terrific players on our soundtrack. I was told that we had some of the best horn players in the world that played for a movie. So that was really inspiring.
Oh, all right. I'm going to re-listen to the music on the way through the movie again. So,
yes.
What about your personal views on dreaming and sleeping? Obviously it's a big part of the movie, where Marcus is, you know, waking up and, you know, having, you know, trying to discover what's going on. What's the thinking behind all that?
Well, I definitely believe that dreams can communicate some really powerful things to us. I mean, I think in my own life, I've discovered that sometimes I'll write down dreams. I think as a filmmaker, as I'm trying to continually develop a visual imagination, it helps me to write out my dreams. And then it also helps me to look back and think, you know, what could this dream be communicating to me? And oftentimes, they're not literal translations, but things will represent other things in the dreams. And sort of looking at dreams, it's helped me to realize things that I'm either working through or need to work through or something going on in my life. And so I wanted to communicate something similar in what Marcus is going through as well. So the dreams that he has, there are a lot of metaphors going on in the dreams. There's a lot of symbolism happening. So I really tried to layer, and if you listen to the director's commentary, I talk about what each of all that symbolism in the dreams. But I know that for me personally, I found that to be really helpful. And so I think it's only interesting to really do that through movies too.
Okay. Now going back to earlier when you were talking about, when we asked you about, the production and all that, you were talking about the dirt and all that. What kind of hardware were you using? I mean, that's one of the things about NewsTech. We kind of talk about video hardware and that kind of thing. What software, hardware, what was the main platform that you were using?
The main editing platform we used was Final Cut Pro.
Oh, I love you right there.
Yeah, we were a Final Cut Pro movie, so we had, you know, a lot of Macs, mm-hmm. and a lot of external hard drives.
Yeah. lots of FireWire drives, FireWire 800 drives.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So, and then that was helpful because at some point when my editor, when you have an editor on a film, you hire him for a certain period of time. And then when he left the project, I have Final Cut Pro myself. So I was able to then take some of those elements and continue being able to turn the film, create a trailer from the film, create a lot of other things from it as well.
So you're pretty savvy with it then.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
What do you think of the new Final Cut Pro 10?
Well, I haven't switched over yet. I read a lot about it. And one of the things that I read, which I don't know if they've corrected that now, is that it does not give you an EDL list. And for those of you who don't know what that is, an edit decision list, so that when you're editing, especially when you're editing something that's originated on film, you need to output an EDL so that when your master is being created, the post-production house can use those numbers to create the master. So I was told it doesn't have that, and it didn't seem to have a lot of other features too. That was when it first came out, so I've been using the previous version. Do you know if they have improved any of those things?
I haven't heard anything.
EDL's coming.
Ah, okay. Yeah. So I feel like when it's at the stage where feature film editors are using it, then I feel like it'll be ready to switch over. But for the moment, it sounds like it's almost, it's just a little too, has too much of a consumer bent.
Yeah.
It's user interface is nice, though.
Yeah, I've heard. I've seen it. It looks really good.
Yeah, it's a lot like...
I like that you don't have to wait for it to render. You can continue working.
Yeah, it's a lot like iMovie. So
That's what I've heard.
Yeah,
that's
so going from one to the other is a little more seamless. But yeah, even some of the broadcasters that I've talked to the Time Warner news station here in Albany, they use Final Cut, and I don't think they've made the transition over to the new one because of what you were saying before. It's not quite ready for prime time, but hopefully it'll get
right.
There. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Apple's pretty good about improving their product. So hopefully over time that will be the case.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So Bill, did you
take discrete effects, for example? We don't support the old Final Cut, but with our visual effects, we support the new one. So it is a nice user interface and easier to make films with it, but it is missing some features that'll be added.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
Alan, do you know what a TriCaster or a video toaster is?
Is the TriCaster a, it's sort of like a news truck in a smaller box?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. He's on it.
In the toaster, I'm not entirely sure. Is it, but it has something to do with editing, right?
Yeah, it's like one of the first video editing systems in the early 90s.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Old school, yeah. Although they had one for Windows for a while, but that got discontinued too.
Oh, interesting. So do you still make those?
NewTek supports them. They no longer make them.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah.
That's what's going to basically power the video end of the studio here in New York when I get things up and rolling, is a video toaster in that. It's got it's all switching and that kind of stuff.
It's nice. It's good for live stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of it does live really well.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Okay.
That was
an Amiga. Do you know what that is?
What is it called?
Do you know what an Amiga is? I'm just curious. No big deal if you don't.
Is it like a creature that...
Maybe.
No. We're not laughing at you. No. No, it's... Bill, you knew he wasn't going to know. Why'd you have to ask him?
It's a classic computer platform for video editing and filmmaking. That's
why. I'm going to name a creature after that. What's the name of it again?
Amiga.
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 Yeah.
Yes.
Google Amiga computer, you'll see.
Yeah.
Amiga. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Most people don't know what it is nowadays. I'm just curious if you know.
No, I haven't heard of it.
We
used to use it to make movies.
Oh, okay.
We're kind of advocates of the platform. Bill and I are like retro computing geeks. So we still have some old Amigas lying around, even though they're like 25, 30 years old.
Wow. So, that's amazing.
We actually had a little gathering here in Albany at the clubhouse where I live. And we had a 16-year-old kid show up with all these old like Commodore 64s, VIC 20s, Atari 2600s, all these old school things. And he's 16 years old. He knows what they all are and how they work. And I ask him, well, what kind of computer do you use at home? I mean, you got a Mac, you got a PC, you got a, you know, Core 2, or what do you got? It's like, I don't have a modern computer.
Wow.
Yeah. That flummoxed me. That one got me. So, but Bill, did you have anything else that you wanted to pose to our friend here?
Well, Discrete Effects will be giving away three the Blu-ray combo packs for In My Sleep. It's a great movie.
Yep.
I recommend people buy it. I'll promote it, and hopefully, a lot more people find out about the film and rent it or buy it.
Yeah, and they can go to InMySleep.com. That's our website if they'd like to see more about the movie.
Yeah, I've got
that's it. Nice. Who designed that? That's a nice website.
Thanks. Web designer that put it together.
Cool.
Awesome. Yeah. And I got to say, I mean, the cover looks nice too. I'm looking at I'm holding it right in my hands right now. I've got it. but yeah, it looks really nice as well. And I was a fine arts major before I got into broadcasting. I can say it looks very well done. I like it.
Oh, good. Thanks.
You're very welcome. So, Alan, I want to thank you so much for being on NewsTech. I really do appreciate taking your time,
Absolutely.
Taking the time out to come out on the show. Alan Wolf, he's the producer, director, and writer of the movie In My Sleep. It's on Blu-ray and DVD right now. And if you go down to the links here in the show notes for this particular episode, we'll have the information on how you can get in on that giveaway for a copy of the movie that the Hollywood Reporter is saying a sexy, well-made thriller. So thank you once again, Alan, for being on NewsTech.
Absolutely.
Take care, Alan. Thanks. You can rent it at Redbox, and it's on iTunes as well.
Zio is a comprehensive system to help you improve your sleep using your iPhone or Android smartphone. Are you getting 6 to 8 hours of sleep at night and still waking up tired? Well, for the first time ever, you can track your sleep patterns and how much restorative REM and deep sleep you actually get so you can better manage your health and overall wellness. Zio takes the science of sleep out of the lab and puts it in your hands. The lightweight Zio SoftWave headband tracks your actual sleep stages through the night and sends them wirelessly to your smartphone. Easy, accurate, comfortable. So get the Zio Sleep Manager for your iPhone or Android phone. It's going to help you sleep so much better and have a much more restful night and make you feel so much better throughout the day. So go to the website and check it out, myzeo.com. That's myzeo.com, the Zio Sleep Manager. If you haven't listened to an episode of the Kim and Rich Show, here's what you've missed. It's up to a felony charge for promoting the use of or owning more than six marital aids.
He goes with the good word.
I go with the good word because I don't know if I want to say that word on a podcast.
Since when are you shy about that stuff? Come on.
I'm still trying to figure out if this podcast should be considered explicit or clean.
Episode, maybe.
Oh, man. I get six? Who's going to have six?
I'm sure some people do.
How many do you have?
I can't tell you.
Wait a minute. Hold it. Hold up.
Can we move on now?
Hold up. The Kim and Rich Show, Wednesdays at 11 a.m. Eastern on AmigaZ.org. And that's going to wrap it up for this episode of News Tech. I want to thank Alan Wolf for being on the show. If you want to find out more about Alan's movie, In My Sleep, make sure you go to the website, InMySleep.com. It's available on Blu-ray, DVD, as well as a digital download. And if you want to find out more about News Tech, you can, of course, go to our website at DiscreetFX.com, or you can email us, NewsTech@DiscreetFX.com. And as well as AmiZ Studios website, who proudly produces and distributes News Tech. You can find us at AmigaZ.org. Thanks again to Alan Wolf for being on the show. And from Bill P. and myself, thanks for listening.